Hello and welcome. I'm Penelope Jane Smith, Executive Director of Real Prosperity, Inc. And in today's special training, you are going to learn how to send kids to college debt-free. Whoop, whoop. So even if you don't have kids in college, I still encourage you to watch this training because you'll be equipped with the information and resources that can dramatically change the lives of people you care about who this does impact. This is a really big deal because the latest stats that I saw before recording this training show that according to the Federal Reserve, Americans now owe over $1.6 trillion in student loan debt, which is roughly half a trillion more than the total US credit card debt. So it's a really big issue. There are about 44 million student loan borrowers in America right now, with 70% of college students graduating with student loan debt, which can take 10 to 30 years, sometimes even longer, to pay off. And not everyone graduates. You know, 40% of students who start college don't earn a degree after 6 years. Either they've dropped out or it's taking them longer. But for whatever reason, they haven't earned a degree, but they still have the debt if they've borrowed the money. And some people take student loans less seriously because they think, oh, well, I'll be able to get that debt forgiven later with student loan forgiveness programs. But the reality is you really can't count on that ever happening. According to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, about 25% of American workers were supposed to be eligible for student loan forgiveness, but less than 1% of the people who applied actually got it. And a lot of people don't realize that even bankruptcy doesn't typically clear student loans. So we're saddling our kids with crushing amounts of debt that can really impact the rest of our lives. But it doesn't have to be that way. That's the good news. In this training, you'll discover how to pay cash for college, even if it's already your kid's senior year of high school and you haven't saved a dime, okay? It is possible. You'll learn the number one key to being able to afford college. This may surprise you. You'll get a free resource for searching over 10,000 scholarships and grants. You'll learn how to save and invest for college tax-free, and savvy strategies to qualify for way more scholarships, grants, and debt-free financial aid. So if that sounds good, give me a thumbs up. Oh, you guys aren't on video. Okay, does that sound good? I'm gonna assume you're saying yes. And I encourage you to take notes as we go along because I'll share a lot of details and resources. So you can jot down the options that seem like they'd be most helpful for you or someone you know, because not all of them are going to apply, but some of them will. And the most exciting part is that when you support kids to graduate from college debt-free, whether you're there, your kids or someone else's, you help them begin life way ahead of 70% of their peers who have student loans, and you set them up for success in building wealth and financial freedom. So as of this recording, the average student loan payment in the United States is about $400 a month. So instead of making that student loan payment for the next 10 years, let's say, not even think about 30 years, what if your kid put $400 a month into investments? So if your kid started investing $400 a month at age 20 and did that for 10 years and, you know, never invested another dime after that, if that money grew at 10%, how much do you think this kid would have by age 65? Well, if you do the math, this is $400 a month for 10 years. And then not investing a dime after that, by age 65, they would have about $2.7 million. It's a big deal. Now, imagine that instead of stopping investing after 10 years, what if they kept investing $400 a month until age 65? Guess how much they'd have? About $4.2 million. So that's the biggest hidden cost of student loans, more than the interest rate, more than the money that you borrow. It's that they lost an opportunity to become a multimillionaire. It's the way they inhibit someone's ability to invest and build wealth. So in this example, if the student was paying $400 a month for 10 years on their student loans, they didn't just lose the $48,000 that they paid in student loan payments. They lost an opportunity to earn, you know, $2.7 million. Or to have $2.7 million or more. So that's the real big hidden cost. So have I convinced you that it's worthwhile to send kids to college debt-free? Hopefully. So now, how do you do that? So we'll talk about programs and opportunities to get tuition covered for free. Outside of those options, there are three ways to finance college: scholarships, grants, and cash flow. Three ways without debt: scholarships, grants, and cash flow. Boom, boom. So before we dive into the details of those, I want to back up a sec and point out that this all begins with financial education and mindset. Your own financial education and mindset, and your kids' financial education and mindset. Now, I'm making a presupposition in this training that your kid, I'm just going to say your kid, okay, even if it's someone else's kid or yourself, that's just the terminology I'm going to use. And I might say kid or kids, or, you know, just roll with it, okay? You could alter that to fit your situation. So I'm making the presupposition that your kid wants to go to college. But college is not a fit for everyone. And at the end of the day, our job as parents isn't to make our kids go to college at any cost. That's not what this is about. It's to support them in becoming happy, healthy, well-functioning adults, right? So with that as the main goal and setting them up for graduating from college debt-free as a happy side effect as early as possible, you want to encourage your kid to develop a love for learning. And to give you an example of, you know, how we've done this with Gabriel, here's a snapshot of my mom reading to Gabriel, who, as of this recording, is 2 years and 9 months old. This is my toddler. He can already read probably thousands of words and speak at least a few words of 6 different languages, which I think is pretty amazing. Now, that's not because we've pushed it on him. Like, we show him flashcards, educational videos, we read him tons of books, and it's not because we're crazy overachievers that are like, baby's going to Harvard. Like, that's not what this is about. It's because he likes it. And so we see, like, where his natural interest is, and then, you know, give him more of what he likes. So I bought him some English reading videos to see if he'd like them, and he loved them. So when he started getting bored of watching those over and over, I got him Spanish and Japanese. And then when he, you know, went through those over and over, then I got him Chinese and Vietnamese. And now I need to watch those too, because he says stuff to me in Vietnamese and I don't know what he's saying, because he speaks more Vietnamese than I do, which I speak like 3 words, but he speaks, you know, more than that. So that's just kind of how it's developed. And so it's just an example of encouraging their natural curiosity and encouraging their natural love of learning. As your kid gets older, look for teachable moments around money and start increasing their financial education. Teach them that money comes from creating value for someone else. You're either, you know, doing work or selling something or somehow creating value for another person. And then what do you do once you've earned money? Well, there's 3 things we do with money. We save some of it, we give some of it, and we spend some of it. So that way, you teach your kid to enjoy money. They're not going to become a miser. You teach them to be generous, and you teach them to do that while saving for the future. It's a great idea to teach them how to do cash flow planning and invest, you know, early on, look for those teachable moments. You may have played Cashflow 101 at one of my live events, one or more of my live events. And did you know that there is a Cashflow for Kids version? So here is the Cashflow for Kids. You can buy it on Amazon. Now, once they're in middle school or high school, they know enough math to play the adult version. But before that, this can be a fun option. And then as you're increasing their financial education, decide what your family's culture and beliefs are around debt. So you might decide that your family's relationship with debt is, we don't borrow money, or we don't borrow money unless it's to buy a house, or we only borrow money if it's a calculated risk and we have a backup plan if plan A doesn't work, and this is how you figure that out. So you want to kind of groom them up in that, because debt is going to be sold to them like really, really intensely as they get older. So you want to catch them as young as you can. And at school, your kid is going to be immersed in a culture where everyone thinks it's totally normal to borrow a ton of money for college. Like, that's just what you do. Is there another way? Right? And not just for tuition, okay? They will be pressured hard and marketed to extremely aggressively to get credit cards and buy stuff that they can't afford to build their credit, okay? You don't need to help your kid build their credit. You need to help them learn how to manage cash flow early on so they don't need to borrow money. Can they still get a mortgage? Yes. Can they still rent cars? Yes. You get a mortgage by going to a company that does manual underwriting. You don't need a credit score at all. So, you know, they can build their credit if they want, but don't encourage them to take on a bunch of debt just for the sake of building their credit. So ideally you get to them first so that they're strong enough to say, no, thanks. That's not how I roll. You know, when they're on the college campus and it's like, hey, apply for this credit card and get a free t-shirt. You know, there's going to be a lot of that. And then especially as they head into middle school, you know, if you're catching them in time, your kid might be older than that already. But keep an ongoing casual conversation going with your kids about their talents, their abilities, their passions, and what kind of careers might line up with those. So, you know, encourage them to dream about the future and explore what they really love doing. You know, a lot of kids don't do that and they don't get that encouragement. Like we hear like, what do you want to be when you grow up? But this is more, you know, helping them tune into like what they really love and what they're good at and what they enjoy and what that might look like in a career in the future. But it's just kind of like really low key at this point, just kind of opening up and paying attention to what do you see that lights them up? What do you see them get excited about? And then kind of like highlighting and pointing that out for them. Another place to get to your kids before our culture does is around the idea of their dream school. Oh, the dream school. Okay, so make it very clear as easy as possible that their dream school is the school they can afford to go to without taking on any debt. Another thing that might not seem obvious now, but could really make or break your kids' chances later, is to teach them how to behave appropriately when it comes to social media. With social media, kids now are documenting their lives permanently online. And this is a big deal because college admissions people, providers of scholarships, and potential employers look at this stuff and it's out there forever. So make sure that your kid learns not to post anything that they wouldn't feel comfortable reading out loud in front of their entire school, or post a picture online that they wouldn't want all of their friends and classmates and teachers to see. So obviously the earlier you start, the easier this is going to be. But even if your kid is already 18, I want to share with you. Oh, I thought I had a slide for this. Maybe I don't. Oh, there's no slide for that. Okay. So I want to share with you the number one key to being able to afford college. the number one key to being able to afford college. So what do you think it is? This is so simple that it can be mind-blowing. So the number one key to being able to afford college is, bum-ba-da-bum, school choice. This is why it's so important to make it clear that their dream school is the school they can afford to go to without borrowing money. This is a big deal, and it might require your kid and you to reevaluate what going to college looks like. So in my experience, I was programmed from a very early age that going to college meant moving to another state to live on campus for 4 years. And that was the way to do it. I didn't see any other option. Like, that, nothing other than that occurred to me. But that's not the only way to get an education. It's not even the best way. And it's definitely not the most affordable. So it's really important that you guide your kid in making a good decision here, because your child's brain isn't fully developed yet until 25 years of age. And they're supposed to be making these big decisions that impact their whole life. They're not equipped to make the best decision. They're thinking about, like, where are the best parties? You know, who has the best sports team? What's the prettiest campus? Right? Like, that's what they're being encouraged to think about with their dream school. So help keep them from making huge mistakes that could haunt them for decades. And this is for you too, okay? Please don't believe the myth that your kid has to go to an Ivy League school to improve their career opportunities or make more money after graduation. It's just not true. I want to share with you this study from 2018. They analyzed the CEOs of all the Fortune 500 companies, and what percentage of them do you think went to Ivy League schools? Only 9.2%. And one of my colleagues did the largest research study of millionaires to date and found that 79% of millionaires did not attend a prestigious private college or university. So this idea that your kid has to get this elite private education and go hundreds of thousands of dollars into debt so that they'll be set up for success in life is just a lie. There's really nothing to support it. For most companies, assuming your kid wants to go work for a company, you know, they might want to own their own business or do something else. What matters most is that they have a degree, not so much where the degree is from. And while you're guiding them in their decision-making, encourage them to choose an area of study that's valued in the marketplace. Their biggest return on investment is in themselves right now. So that is true, but it does not make sense financially for them to invest $240,000 in college to get a $36,000 a year job. And a lot of people do that. And it just doesn't pencil out, right? And then they're saddled with debt into their 50s, sometimes their 60s, you know? In terms of school choice in the United States, it's much more affordable to go to an in-state school. In the most recent stats that I've seen, the average annual tuition for an in-state public university was about $10,000 a year. Some are more, some are less. Out-of-state was about $24,000 a year. This is per year for tuition only, not counting room and board and books and stuff. So for tuition, it's more than twice as expensive to go to an out-of-state school. So if we go back to return on investment for a minute, is their degree going to be worth twice as much because they went to school in another state? I don't think so. If it takes them 4 years to graduate, it's about $56,000 more expensive just to go out of state. I don't think that they're getting anything that's worth that extra $56,000, really. And then an even more affordable option is to go to community college for the first 2 years to get their general education or prerequisite classes out of the way for a fraction of the cost then they can transfer to another school to complete their bachelor's degree in years 3 and 4, or they can just get their associate's degree and call it a day. So my brother Thatcher did this and saved a ton of money on college. Here's a selfie with my awesome brother when we went to Disneyland last year. He went to community college for 2 years, still made a ton of friends and had a great time, had a great social life. And then he transferred to UC Berkeley to complete his bachelor's and was hired by Amazon before he even graduated. And so now he's still working at Amazon. He's on track for management. Like, he's on track to be making $500,000 or $600,000 a year. It's like, it's insane. This kid is going to be so rich, you know? And he didn't need the $35,000 a year private university to do that. Even just taking community center class or community college classes during the summer after high school, after they graduate, that can be helpful to save money and get a head start on those credit hours. So even if they don't want to like go to community college for 2 years, they can still knock out some credits that way. So last I checked, the average annual tuition for an in-state community college was only $3,500. So let's compare some options when it comes to school choice, okay? So at the affordable end, the most affordable end, you have in-state community college averaging $3,500 a year. This is based on 2018 stats. Obviously, it, you know, varies from school to school. That's part of school choice. In-state public university, $10,000. Out-of-state, $24,000. Private college, like I went to, $35,000 a year. So instead of 4 years at a private college, which would be $140,000 average just for tuition, if your kid went to community college for 2 years and then an in-state public university for 2 years, school would cost more like $27,000. That would save them $113,000. So do you see why school choice is so important in making college affordable? Yeah, and do you see how you might have to help your kid adjust their expectations about what it looks like, because all their friends are like, oh, I want to go to this school because they have the best parties, or something like that. So to estimate the total cost, you would take the annual cost of the colleges you're planning to attend times the number of years you estimate your kid will attend. And then you need to add on room and board fees if they're going to live on campus, which they don't have to. It might be cheaper to have them live at home or off campus. On campus, room and board, last I checked, average $10,000 a year. And then you want to add a cushion for books, school supplies, miscellaneous living expenses. It's worth checking to see if your state offers any type of free or reduced college options. I believe 17 states now offer some kind of college promise program. So they could look into college promise programs. For example, the Tennessee promise program allows high school grads to attend a 2-year technical school for free. So that's pretty cool. And another cool option, we're getting more and more free school options or inexpensive school options, which is really cool. So I don't know if you know about this, but Modern States, this is, the website is modernstates.org. This is a cool option to be aware of because this is a nonprofit organization that has partnered with the online learning platform founded by Harvard at MIT. And they have a program, as you can see here, called Freshman Year for Free, designed to support students to earn up to 1 year of college credit without any tuition or textbook expense. Pretty cool, right? So I'll post that link in the chat for the people who are here live. Boom, that's modernstates.org. Another way to get college covered for free is that there are some programs that'll allow you to work for the college and then attend for free, which is pretty cool. And while we are talking about school choice, I just want to point out that for some kids, trade schools might actually be a better fit. Trade schools are designed to give students the technical skills they need to prepare them for a specific career. So here are some examples: electrician, dental hygienist, plumber, paralegal, nurse, graphic designer, welder, computer technician, aircraft mechanic, cosmetologist, chef, marine mechanic, construction manager, massage therapist, pharmacy technician. So a lot of potentially lucrative careers, you know, could happen just from a trade school. So completing a trade school program typically takes less time and less money than getting a bachelor's degree, and your kid leaves with a skill that's highly valued in the marketplace. So if your kid is passionate about pursuing a career in one of these areas, could be a good way to go, right? So we've established that your kid's dream school is the one that they can afford without student loans, and covered how school choice is the number one key to making college affordable. Now let's circle back to the three ways to finance college that I mentioned before, which were, what were they? Scholarships, grants, and cash flow. So in all three cases, obviously starting early is gonna set you up for success, but don't give up. If you're starting later, you can still do it. So let's start with cash flow. Bum-ba-da-bum. This is where part of someone's income, doesn't have to be yours, could be, gets allocated towards paying for college. So in terms of cash flow, one thing to consider is if you want to contribute financially to your kid's college. If you do, I encourage you to make sure that you've got your own financial foundation solid first. Like when you go on an airplane, you know how they always tell you to put your own oxygen mask on before you help others? It's like that. So it's scary how many well-meaning parents take out second mortgages against their homes, drain their retirement accounts, or co-sign on student loans because they believed in this myth that they had to provide an elite and expensive education for their kid to be able to succeed in life. And that's just not true. So having your financial foundation in place means that you're out of consumer debt yourself. You have a reserve fund cushion of 3 to 6 months of living expenses in savings, and you're on track enough with your retirement planning that supporting your kid to go to college now isn't going to mean that they have to support you financially later in life. There's just no need for that. It's so doable for them to get a degree without putting that burden on you or your relationship. So those are some things to consider if you want to cash flow part of your kid's college. Another thing to consider is, even if you're able to fully fund your kid's college and send them to like the most elite, expensive private school, even if you are able to do that, Should you? Having them pay for all or part of their education might help them get a better appreciation for money and for their degree. You know, we tend to value things more when we've worked for them. So something to think about. You know, obviously that is a personal choice, but something to consider. So if you do want to contribute money towards kids' college, there are some great ways to save and invest for college tax-free. So the first one I want to talk about is an ESA, which stands for Educational Savings Account. And then there's also a 529 plan, which is named for the part of the tax code that it's in. So in any case, you put after-tax money into the account. Your money gets to grow tax deferred, oh yeah, and as long as you use the money for qualified educational expenses like tuition and books, it's tax free. Yeah! So in either case, if your kid decides not to go to college after all, the money can be used for another family member's education as long as they are related to your kid as the original beneficiary of the account. So it could be a sibling. It could even be your kids' kids. This can be like a family legacy. And if they end up getting scholarships, check the rules. You might be able to pull the amount of the scholarship back out without penalty, or you might be able to just leave the money in to transfer to a relative. So the rules are different for each one. So you'd want to choose the one that best fits your situation. So I want to show you an overview of the key differences and the pros and cons of each. So with an ESA, they have more investment options, which I really like, including, you know, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and you can reallocate those investments anytime. So if you are going to implement the MPX investment strategy inside of the educational savings account, it's probably going to be easier to do that in an ESA, though the 529 plans are changing all the time, so that's not a hard and fast rule. You can also use the ESA for primary school and secondary school expenses in addition to college, so that's pretty cool. With the ESA, there are some income limitations. Last I checked, you had to make less than $110,000 a year as a single person or $220,000 a year married. The funds must be used by age 30, and you can only contribute $2,000 per year, which, you know, if you start doing that early enough, that might be plenty. With the 529 plan, you can contribute up to $14,000 a year, which is sweet. There's no age limit and there's no income restrictions. It can be used for college expenses only, and there are fewer investment options. Usually there's like a couple different, two or three different like portfolios that you choose from, and you can only reallocate up to twice a year. And again, check, because those rules are often changing, but that's kind of the overview, and so you just want to pick which one makes the most sense for your situation. Now, both of these options are typically going to be better than prepaid tuition, which is another thing that you might get marketed to for. Another thing that you might see, because your money will statistically grow faster in when it's invested than the inflation rate of tuition. I also think that these options are better than an UTMA, U-T-M-A, which stands for Uniform Transfer to Minors Act, which is basically you're just giving your kid money, you know, for whatever they want, and it doesn't have to be used for education. So that's what some people do if they want to transfer money and they don't know if their kid's going to go to school, but there's no tax benefit to it. Another interesting option is to have your kid open a Roth IRA, because you can take money you've contributed out early to pay for qualified education expenses like tuition and books, as long as they're enrolled more than half time at an eligible institution, and as long as the account has been established for at least 5 years before the first withdrawal. So keep in mind that your kid has to have an earned income to be able to open an IRA. And while they can take the contributions out tax-free, they'd still have to pay tax on the growth if they took that out. But it would be allowed to grow tax-free until then. So it's an interesting option. If your kid is going off to college soon and you want to support them financially, then you can just look at your own cash flow plan and decide how much you can allocate to that. So that's all, you know, you cash flow in college. But your kid can also generate cash flow for their own education. And this might be something you want to encourage them to do anyway for the sake of their own personal development. So before they go to college, encouraging them to have a part-time job, summer jobs, or even start a business can help them save for school while gaining valuable experience that can help them with their career later. And encouraging them to work during college is actually a great idea too. Contrary to popular belief, the research shows that working part-time while they're in school actually correlates to a higher GPA, better academic performance. They learn to manage their time better and aren't out partying as much, and it makes them more marketable after college because they have work experience, which is very cool. And then there are also work-study programs and options where they might be able to work for the school and earn money that way or get their tuition covered as a perk. If your kid is already part of a work-study program, please lean in, because they might want to check with their school's financial aid office to see if they can ask for more hours, assuming the funds are available. So most people don't realize that a lot of universities have work study funds that go unused. So your kid could potentially get more hours if their school allows that option. So that's pretty cool. So now let's talk about something really fun, scholarships and grants. Now, believe it or not, there are things you can start doing as early as while your kids are in middle school to set them up for success with scholarships and grants. But even once your kids are already attending college, it's still not too late to get scholarship and grant money. So first of all, you may as well fill out the free application for federal student aid, that's called FAFSA, for every year that your kid is going to college. This is a form that you and your kid fill out each year that the school that they go to school, that the school uses to figure out how much money they can offer your kid and what kinds of financial aid your kid qualifies for. So it could be federal grants, work study programs, state aid, school aid, all of which is awesome. And they'll also offer you student loans, which I encourage you to avoid and ignore. Now, there's no maximum income to be eligible for this financial aid. So you may as well fill it out. You never know how much your kid could get. And even if your kid already has a full ride scholarship, you still might want to fill it out as a backup plan in case something happens. There is a deadline to fill it out, and that can vary by state and school by school. So make sure to check and file it as early as possible. When are you going to file it? As early as possible, because grants and scholarships are often given on a first come, first serve basis. So you want to make sure you get that in as early as possible. Now, long before FAFSA is an issue, let's circle back to middle school for a moment, because this is actually the ideal time to start working with your kid on their college plan. Not in an aggressive way, but just starting to kind of open their mind and work with them. So starting in middle school, your kid can start pulling together a file of scholarships. So making a document with the name of the scholarship, the contact info, deadlines, and requirements, so that by the time they hit freshman year of high school, they can just hit the ground running, starting to apply for scholarships. As early as sixth grade, it's worth discussing with your kid if they might want to join the National Junior Honor Society. So this is like a preview to the National Honor Society, the NHS, which is the oldest and most respected student recognition organization in the US. It only accepts students in grades 10 through 12 who have maintained a GPA of 3.0 or higher, and it recognizes achievement in academics, leadership, service, and character. It looks great on college applications, and it can make your kids stand out in their scholarship applications. If your kid gets involved with the National Junior Honor Society in grades 6 through 9, they'll know what to expect and what they need to do to get into the NHS in high school. Now, this is a service organization, so there are meetings to go to and service projects to work on. So you should really only encourage your kid to participate if they're genuinely interested. Don't force them to do it, because there's still a lot of other ways that they can qualify for scholarships and grants and stuff. But if that speaks to them, it can be a really great perk. One savvy strategy to help your kid qualify for way more scholarships, grants, and debt-free financial aid is to invest some time, energy, and possibly even money in getting high scores on the big standardized tests, specifically the SAT and the ACT, or both. Now, even though they won't take these tests until high school, they can practice in eighth grade by taking the PSAT, the official practice SAT. And what's great about taking the PSAT in eighth grade is that it can help your kid get accustomed to that style of testing and the way it's administered. And then they're kind of like a pro at it, you know, by the time they actually take the test later in high school. Just so you know, the PSAT scores from junior year of high school are used to identify National Merit Scholars, which is an award that can lead to some awesome full ride scholarship offers. So it's just worth being aware of if your kid is academically inclined. There's also a pretest option for the ACT called the Pre-Act that's available once they become a sophomore in high school. Eighth grade is also a great time to encourage your kid to do some career shadowing to get a sneak peek into potential career paths. So their school may or may not offer any like official career shadowing, but you can still connect your kid with professionals that they can shadow in areas that they're interested in. So those are some things you can do in middle school to kind of like get the conversation going. And again, you're going to kind of continue that conversation of like, what are they passionate about? Dreaming into their future, right? Then when it comes to high school, as early as freshman year of high school, your kid can start applying for scholarships. I wish I'd known this, but it's true. Now, there aren't as many for freshmen, but there are some. So starting freshman year and all the way through senior year, grades, unfortunately, really matter in terms of being able to get scholarships and grants. So you don't have to pressure your kid to get straight A's or perfect scores on these tests. This is more a matter of making sure that they just realize that someone is watching. Like some kids think that their freshman grades don't matter, but they do. Or senior year, they get senioritis and they're already like, they already have scholarships. They already have their college all picked out. And they're like, okay, now I can goof off. But then sometimes those things can get revoked if they blow it senior year. So you want to make sure that they know that their grades count all 4 years, not from a place of, you know, trying to like pressure them to be perfect, but just realizing that they count, right? Same thing with the scores. It's like, okay, let's just do your best because it can help. And then we'll work with what we've got, right? So that's kind of the attitude that I encourage you to take. In high school, your kid may even be able to take some advanced placement classes or dual enrollment classes while they're in high school and knock out some of those college credits ahead of time that way. That was something I ended up doing. I took a lot of AP classes and I had college credits before I even started college. And then there was a whole bunch of classes I didn't have to take and pay for in college, which was awesome. So from this point on, as soon as they're a freshman in high school, encourage your kid to think of researching and applying for scholarships as their part-time job. The earlier they get started, the more scholarships they apply for, the better their chances are for getting them. And by junior year, they should be devoting an hour every day to their scholarship search and submitting 2 to 5 scholarship applications a week. That's a really good like rule of thumb to go for. And they can start that as early as freshman year. In fact, they can probably make more money doing this than they can from any other part-time job. I recently read a story of a junior high school student who figured out that he had earned $400 an hour in scholarship money for the time that he spent filling out applications. So this is well worth their time. And it might even make sense for your kid to keep this up as a part-time job even once they've started college, because it's still possible to get scholarship opportunities once you're in college. The number of students in each class typically drops a little bit each year, which frees up more scholarship money with fewer students enrolled that are applying for it. So there's still opportunities. So encourage your kid to keep applying no matter how many rejection letters they receive, because every no gets them one step closer to yes. And just like, you know, in your business with getting clients, it's just a matter of just doing it. That's the rhythm of this part-time job. So I want to share with you a great resource for starting to compile their list of scholarships and grants to apply for. And that is Anthony O'Neill's free resource for searching over 10,000 scholarships and grants. The website that for that is anthonyoneill.com/scholarships. And if you go there, you can see his debt-free degree scholarship search. So you can actually enter what grade you're in, your GPA, what state you're in, major or college if that applies. There's all these different ways you can filter, and you can find matches, or you can just scroll through and see these various things. And then that can get their list started. Now, in terms of grants, once you've completed the FAFSA, you'll find out what kind of federal grants your kid qualifies for. But even if they don't offer your kid anything, you can still contact your state grant agency for more options. So if you go to www.2.ed.gov, you can actually look up state grant options. So you would go here, click on grants, and then do some exploring about what state grants are available potentially for your kid. And then they'll want to continue to research scholarships because new scholarships are being created all the time. So encourage them as part of their part-time job to do frequent online searches, reach out to local community groups, businesses, charities to see if they offer scholarships. So it's a good idea to look into Kiwanis, the Lions Club, banks, utility companies, local churches, local sports clubs. If you have an employer or your partner has an employer, like check and see if they offer scholarships to their employees' kids. Sometimes they do. Most scholarship applications are free. If they aren't, check to make sure that they're legit before paying anything. And then I want to give you three hot tips for applying for scholarships. Would that be helpful? All right, so here are three hot tips. Tip number one is go for the small fish first. Your kid will find local scholarships, might be $300, $500. I got some of those. I got a $500 scholarship for being Portuguese, for being part Portuguese, which is pretty cool. So those local scholarships with smaller dollar amounts, and then there's national scholarships and grants, which usually have bigger scholarship amount, bigger dollar amounts, but more competition. So one strategy is to start by applying for the smaller local scholarships because there are fewer applicants and those small dollar amounts can add up. And then go for the bigger ones too. Why not? But it can help to start with the small fish first. Tip number two is to apply early. As I mentioned before, some scholarships are awarded on a first come, first serve basis. So pay attention to when the applications are due and get them in right away. And then tip three is to write great essays and repurpose them. So most scholarship applications will involve your kid writing an essay. And they can often repurpose these essays for multiple applications with some minor revisions. So one savvy strategy is to get some editing support for that first essay or those first essays to make sure that the writing is clear, compelling, free of mistakes. So your kid could ask for help from an English teacher or a writing tutor or editor, and then make sure that they've got something good to start with, and then save every essay in a dedicated folder on their computer in case they can use them again and repurpose all our parts for another essay. Keep in mind and remind your kid that each essay will have specific instructions, and it's really common for students to not follow the directions. So encourage your kid to check and double check the writing prompts, the word count, and the other directions for each essay, because that's going to help them actually, you know, get the scholarships over the kids that didn't read the directions, right? And then, as I mentioned earlier, the scoring on standardized tests can be a big deal for getting scholarships and grants, specifically the SAT and or ACT. So you can get a pretty fabulous return on investment by investing in tutors and or test prep courses to help get their scores up. That's something that's really worthwhile. And again, it's not like you must be perfect, but like let's say, hey, how do we get your score up as much as possible? And then we'll work with what we've got from there, right? So it's worth investing the money to have them take the test more than once. Almost two-thirds of students who took the ACT, the ACT, a second time were able to improve their overall score. And you can even find out if the colleges your kid is considering accept super scoring. What's super scoring? So that's when a college will accept your student's highest score in each section of the test from all of their testing attempts. So let's say on one test, on this test, they got the highest score in English. And then in this test, they didn't score as high in English, but they scored higher on math. This one with super tests, with super scoring, they'll take the highest English, the highest math, the highest of each of the categories. And almost 90% of colleges will super score the SAT and 68% will super score the ACT. So it's worth looking into. All right, so we've covered a lot of ground for how to send kids to college debt-free for their associate's or bachelor degree. But what about grad school? Like if they want an MBA, what if they want to go to law school? What if they want to go to medical school? Well, a lot of these strategies still apply. School choice is still huge, huge, because there's a wide range of cost among medical schools, law schools, all these programs from one school to another. And again, the big thing is that they get the degree. It doesn't have to be from a particular place. So that's a big deal. And then your kid may be able to get scholarships. They may need to work to save up or work to keep cash flowing their graduate degree. Some other options that can work. Some people have been able to get their school paid for by agreeing to work for a particular company or in a particular underserved area for a certain amount of time after they graduate. So that's one thing, that's one possibility to look into. For med school, they can look into an MD-PhD program, which would mean becoming an employee of the school and working for them while going through med school for free. So that's hard to get, but it's totally worth it because med school for free, right? So it is possible to go to grad school without student loans as well. So let's review. How to pay cash for college, even if it's already your kid's senior year of high school, even if you haven't saved a dime. Remember that school choice is critical. So maybe they start with a community college or check out the freshman year for free program. Obviously, fill out the FAFSA, apply for scholarships and work part-time, and then choose a school that you can afford to go to with what you got from that, right? The number one key to being able to afford college, which surprises a lot of people, is school choice, right? We talked about that. A free resource for searching over 10,000 scholarships and grants is Anthony O'Neill's debt-free degree scholarship search tool at anthonyoneill.com/scholarships. In terms of how to save and invest for college tax-free, we talked about ESAs, educational savings accounts, 529 plans, the pros and cons of each of those. And then also the Roth IRA option, which is sort of tax-free. You're putting after-tax money in, it grows tax-free, and then you can't take it out tax-free. So, you know, it's an interesting option, but if you're pretty sure your kid's gonna go to school, then the ESA or the 529 might be better. If you're not sure with the Roth IRA, like then at least they've got all this money going towards retirement if they decide not to go to school. So that's pretty cool. And then we talked about savvy strategies for qualifying for way more scholarships, grants, and debt-free financial aid. So obviously fill out the FAFSA for every year they're in school, even if they have scholarships, even if you can afford to send them, with cash. Check out being in the National Honor Society if it's a fit. Invest time, money, and energy in getting their test scores up for the standardized tests, the SAT and the ACT. Approaching applying for scholarships like a part-time job. Having somebody edit their essays and being able to repurpose those, so that's strong. And then, hey, make sure they don't blow all that hard work by slacking on their grades, thinking freshman or senior year doesn't count, or posting something damaging on social media. That's why we address some of those things. So now your mission from this training, should you choose to accept it, is to write down your top three tips for yourself or to share with others for sending kids to college debt-free, and save them as a note where you can find it easily when you need it. Like, let's say you're having a conversation with somebody who's talking about, like, oh my gosh, how am I going to afford to send my kid to college? You can say, well, would you like to know my top three tips for sending your kids to college debt-free? And if they say yes, boom, you have it right there. For example, you might save it as a note on your phone. I highly encourage you to do that. So I hope that what you learned today, you'll take it and use it to set the young people in your life up for success in building wealth and financial freedom.